We'll come back to order at this time. Next appeal, 11-3A for Stacy Whitfield. Bob, would you give us a staff report?
Okay. This is case number 2011-0003A. The applicant is Stacy Whitfield and the Hidden Oaks Subdivision. The applicant, Stacy Whitfield, representing Hidden Oaks Subdivision, is seeking to appeal the Planning Commission approval of Division 3 Permit 2011-16 for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. In review, the applicant, Stacy Whitfield, is appealing the Planning Commission's decision to approve Division 3 Permit 2011-16 for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex, believing that the proposed development does not meet all the requirements of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. The applicant believes that the approval of Division 3 Permit 2011-16 does not meet the objectives stated in the purpose on page 5, number 1 of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. The applicant believes that the approval of Division 3 Permit 2011-16 is contrary to the absolute and relative policies related to sections 11.1.1, 11.1.3, 4.2, 4.3, Appendix D, O, and Q of the Development Guidance Code as detailed in the application. As part of the Division 3 approval process, of course, the project received a total score of 24 on the policy checklist out of a maximum possible score of 87. The Planning Commission approval of this Division 3 permit by a vote of 4 in favor and 2 against, with a total of 18 conditions based upon the belief that this proposed development would comply with the absolute and relative policies of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. The conditions were placed upon this permit in order to mitigate the concerns of the neighboring property owners and also to ensure compliance with the absolute and relative policies of the Development Guidance Code. In summary, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this appeal request, the Planning Commission approval of the decision of record for Division 3 Permit 2011-16 shall be reversed and shall be considered null and void. The following requirements shall apply unless revised by the Board. The Board of Adjustment's decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days of, or the approval shall expire. Thank you.
Thank you. Would those that would like to speak on this behalf please rise and be sworn in. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. Stacy Whitfield.
Hi.
Would you spell your name?
My name is Stacy Whitfield, Stacy Whitfield.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My name is Stacy Whitfield, and I'm up here representing Hidden Oaks, located on Whitfield Lane. And I'd just like to say, I'd like for this appeal to keep its point. I don't see where Phase 2 and all that has anything to do with what this appeal is about. This appeal is about what the Planning and Zoning did not do correctly in approving this zone change. I guess I'd like to ask the Board, did you have a chance to read my appeal?
Yes, we read every word of it.
Thank you. Okay, in that case, I'd like to give a summary. I don't want to go over the whole thing word for word. When we were made aware of the intentions of Russell Cook and BSEC to put the racetrack on the property adjacent to our homes back in June, I asked for it and was given a copy of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. I've gone over this code book many times and was very surprised by the Planning and Zoning Board's approval of the change of zoning for Russell Cook's property from agricultural to commercial. There are several codes that were not followed. Page 5, the very first paragraph, states that nothing will be erected, constructed, reconstructed, enlarged, nor the use of any land be changed without a permit issued pursuant to these codes. Codes that were not followed in the approval of the zone change by planning and zoning are, number one, the first thing in the Development Guidance Code is purpose. And in that states, to conserve and protect property and building values. This will not be the case if the racetrack is permitted to be built in almost literally our backyards. Number two, 11.1.1, page 26, water quality. And I actually do want to read that. It's an absolute policy. Definition, a requirement of the code that if not met or satisfied will result in the application for a permit being rejected. Erosion and sediment control. Developments will submit erosion and sediment plans for approval prior to clearing any clearing being done on said project. That was not done. Permits were not acquired prior to the land disturbance. Number three, 4.2, page 15, representations. Nobody was notified of the land disturbance until Russell Cook was cited in January 2011 for disturbing the land without a permit. Number four, 4.3, page 16, conditions of permit approval and issuance. Traffic studies were not provided. Surveys of site disturbance were not provided. Economic development studies were not provided. Acoustic studies were provided the evening that planning and zoning voted. Site excavations began under false pretenses. Form E application was not filed for until 3 days after the Planning and Zoning Board voted to approve the zone change. Number five, 11.1.3, page 27, land use compatibility. I'd like to read Appendix O, commercial zoning compatibility list. This is straight from the guidebook that I was given, okay? The following uses are considered compatible with existing commercial uses when located within 1,000 feet of a zoning request. Offices and office buildings, medical clinics, savings and loan institutions, credit unions, and banks, general offices, radio and television studios, photography studios, automotive service stations, animal hospitals or clinics, hospitals, mortuaries, retail stores and shops, and there's a whole list of those. Auditorium and theater, bowling alleys and amusement arcades, drive-through establishments, food storage lockers, hotels, motels, motor hotels, memberships, clubs, and organizations, printing, publishing, and engraving firms, taverns, appliance repair shops, car wash, drive-in restaurants, dyeing and cleaning works, farm machinery sales and service, general service and repair establishments, lumber yards, motor vehicle sales service and or repair, paint shops, pay-per-use parking lots, HVAC shops, tire sales and service, trailers and mobile home sales, and recording studios. This property that they're proposed to put this racetrack on is surrounded by rural residential and agricultural properties, none of what is listed above. I'd also like to read from Appendix Q, which is the rural residential compatibility use. Rural residential compatibility uses, agricultural use, single-family detached dwellings, churches and parish halls, temples, convents and monasteries, schools, public parks, playgrounds and community buildings, home occupations, two-family dwellings, condominiums, townhouses, apartment complexes, multiple family dwellings, mobile homes, and mobile home parks. There are no commercial properties surrounding this proposed racetrack. And there's also no racetrack listed compatible with rural residential. Also in 11.1.3, off-site nuisances. Noise. Even the city of Springfield addresses the noise nuisances at the highway to the residents close to it, but they're putting up noise barrier walls to diffuse the noise of the highway, and that's not as loud as a racetrack or concert will be. Light, odor, and dust were also addressed in the appeal submitted. Number six, Appendix D, Division 3 permit application requirements. There are seven steps to this before land grading can begin. One, pre-application conference. Two, filing. Filing was done on April 28, 2011. At this point, Russell Cook and BSEC were well over 4 months into grading the land for a racetrack. The land disturbance should have been halted long before now, but definitely at this point. Number three, a concept hearing. Number four, application for public hearing. Number five, public notices. Number 6, public hearing. This was July 11th and voted on July 18th. Number 7, decision of record. At this point, if everything is done correctly, the applicant would start applying for a permit to begin land grading. I'd like to remind you now that Russell Cook and BSEC started their land disturbances several months before they were reported to the Missouri DNR in January 2011. In closing, Russell Cook and BSEC have been doing just exactly what they want and disregarding rules, regulations, and anyone that might object. For everything I've stated above and all the reasons in the appeal submitted, the zone change should not have even been made its way to a vote, let alone an approval. We are requesting and strongly urging this board to overturn the planning and zoning's decision to grant this zone change and allow a racetrack to be built on this property. I also have a couple of other things to say after hearing some of the other people that are up here. You asked to strike the court case that was presented first because it had nothing to do with these appeals. I ask you to also strike the proposed second phase and third phase or whatever else they have going because that also has nothing to do with these appeals. This appeal is to talk about what planning and zoning did not consider and did not take and require before they gave the permission or granted the zone change. Thank you very much for your time.
We were just asking ourselves that. Any questions?
On the list of commercial uses, mm-hmm. is there anything that comes anywhere near close to
a restaurant? Not within 1,000 feet. No, there is not. There's a gas station, but it's, I want to say, 1,200 feet from the proposed track.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Wade?
This commission has now received evidence that phase one of this project is an industrial use for some type of dairy operation and some type of wood making operation.
We understand that that phase is not included in the 809 acre land use change that was approved by P&Z. So it's outside of what we're considering tonight. I just wanted to verify where it laid in conjunction to this 809 acres. And this was the first time that I'd heard about the phase.
There is no phasing identified in the decision of record.
No, but there is the 809 acres.
It is identified, but are you saying that you understand the industrial park or industrial use is not in the 809 acres, or do you know?
I think that she pointed out that the pale green was the usage that they had planned for that.
Okay, so they're going to have to apply for a permit to get that done.
That's correct.
Okay. I left off with the, I was talking about 11.1.7, the last appeal, and we're talking about the same issue in this appeal, so I'll finish my thought and let you consider it here. The information presented by the racetrack developer told MoDOT after the Decision 3 permit was issued that the construction schedule for the project is to begin in March of 2013. That was never brought to the Planning Commission's attention when the application was made. In addition, there was discussion about what the proposed development for the off-site improvements would be. If you'll go to the next. And after having a discussion on October 5th, Mr. Miller of MoDOT wrote, I told the consultants there was no way that the Southwest District was comfortable submitting the application to the cost share committee for the November meeting, particularly with several significant changes in the proposed scope. Two of those things were identified are the two interchanges were proposed as opposed to the three that are identified in the decision of record. Three are identified there. There's two at MoDOT. And also, the construction date of spring 2013 was not addressed. So, back to the original concept hearing. When Mr. Cottle said, we're not going to approve a permit until you have these agreements in place with these off-site improvements because of the substantial issues that may be created. So what we've done with this decision of record, by making it a condition, rather than making it as part of the application process and part of the approval process, we have allowed, maybe by acquiescence or giving the developer some latitude that's not granted or afforded the developer under the development codes, he's been changing the proposal that the Planning Commission considered when it made its decision. And now we are at a point where we should go back to what Mr. Cottle said, and that is the permit's not going to be approved until you have these things in place and you present it to the Planning Commission. And it's certainly not fair to the public if all of these things are in place as they're supposed to be before the permit is issued. Then the public can have a fair debate about whether or not this racetrack should go in, because then the application has been made, MoDOT says, yeah, we'll approve two interchanges or one or three, and the public can say, that's enough for this particular development. What needs to happen, it's incompatible, we know it's incompatible, let them go back, revoke the permit, and let them start over and do it right. Let them do it right. If they want to change... If they want to change their proposal to MoDOT, there's nothing wrong with that. Just don't represent to the Planning Commission you're going to put three interchanges in and then 3 months later say you're going to put two in. Don't let that happen, because we've got one person enforcing. We've got Bob Ashley, who does a great job, but it shouldn't be on them to make sure that they're doing the right thing. It should be part of the permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Tammy Pasco.
Thank you.
Anthony.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I know you've been allowing the other side to do cross-examination after all the witnesses. It would be okay if I do one cross-examination question at this point in time.
Yes, that's allowed.
One point, cross-examination point for Mr. Wade, who just testified for the Whitfield appeal. You represent Big Cedar, correct?
Yes, sir.
Has Big Cedar ever made such changes after getting a land use change and going forward with developments in the past?
I have no knowledge.
No further questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest to the members of the board to take into account, I'm going to address each one of the points raised by Ms. Whitfield, and I would suggest to the board to take into account all of the testimony that we've introduced already in the other appeals tonight rather than me bring the people back up. I think the important thing to understand here, which has come out through questioning and Mr. Atchley's given testimony on it, that on a number of the issues that have been raised by the appellant in this case, this will be the subject of not land use, which is for the 809 acres, but when the actual permits are sought for the actual construction to take place. Ms. Whitfield referred to Ms. Whitfield did not identify any error on the part of the commission on an absolute policy in this case, and I believe the staff report reflected that as well. On 11.1.1, regarding water quality
and erosion. Quiet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On section 11.1.1, regarding water quality and erosion control, you heard the testimony from staff at the beginning, and you heard the testimony from Mr. Jones regarding the grading that's been done on the site. I don't believe there's been any indication that the commission made any error in disregarding those arguments in front of the commission. On 4.2, and 4.2 on representations, that went to the water quality issue as well, and the erosion, the excavation that was done. With regard to 4.3 that she referred to on page 16, the conditions regarding the traffic study, economic development, and acoustical studies for off-site nuisances, those were all relative policies that were taken into account by the Planning Commission at their hearing. No absolute policies. And the traffic study, as was indicated, will not be necessary until further permits are sought. With her referral to section 11.1.3, page 22, land use compatibility, I would refer the board to the previous testimony that had been given on land use compatibility. And with the reference to the appendixes that indicated land use compatibility, we can look on the map and see right there that you see in front of you the location of an airport, the location of Highway 65, the location of a railroad line. There are quarries in the area, things of that nature, not just residential homes. In response to Mr. Wade's argument that the BSEC should go back and start from the beginning and do it right, we have. We did it right from the beginning. We presented the evidence to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission put certain requirements in place after granting the land use change that we sought. We did it right. We don't need to go back and do it again. Thank you for your time. We would suggest that you deny Appeal 11-3A made by Stacy Whitfield for all the reasons that I've stated.
Thank you. Any questions of...
I do have one question for you, sir.
Yes, sir.
You said that you did it right from the beginning.
That's correct.
So you had all the permits to disturb land in place before any excavation was done.
We did it right according to what the Planning Commission, that process.
No. If they said one thing and the book says another, did you do it by the book?
We have followed all the requirements that are necessary for the land disturbance.
Did you get a permit before you disturbed land?
As indicated by the staff report, I can tell you no. We agree with what the staff report has described to this board. What that was presented, that was accurate.
Okay, so you did it right from the beginning, except that you didn't have the permit when you started. I'm just looking to get the record accurate in the time frames of things that were accomplished, whether we could overlook a late permit application or not is another issue. But I would hope that your words that we did it right from the beginning would mean that you met the letter of the law, and I'm not sure that you did.
I was referring to our application to the Planning Commission and the information that was provided to them.
Okay. And did anybody know that there was a permit that was necessary?
I don't believe so. I believe that it...
So then... okay, I'm done.
Thank you. I'll declare the public input session over, and we'll go to the board deliberations. I would comment that in the list of approved compatibility issues, I don't think it's all inclusive. It did not mention any airports, of which we have a new airport, which has been a progress report for the Taney County for having that airport.
Or rock quarries and stuff.
They do the hunting.
Or rock quarries, yes.
Do we have BNR comment on this, or EPA, or CORE?
I can tell you what I know as far as the DNR, the EPA, and the Corps. It is my understanding that right now with the DNR, that they have a permit for 75 acres. It is also my understanding that they have gone beyond the 75 acres. The DNR is happy with the erosion control measures that are in place. They have been on site quite a few times. They have not yet obtained their 404 permit through the Corps, through the Army Corps of Engineers. They're in the process of working with the Corps and applying for that permit now.
Have they indicated any time frame that they'll have a decision?
Have they indicated any time frame?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Unless the applicant can is more knowledgeable on that then.
Okay.
Mr. Jones wants to make a comment on that.
Yeah. If you would like me to speak to that, I'd be happy to do so.
Please do so.
Spencer Jones with Great River. Again, to kind of give you a status of where we're at in working with the DNR and with the Corps of Engineers, in regards to the land disturbance permit for exceeding the original 75-acre permit, we have applied with Taney County Planning and Zoning Office for a 325-acre permit. We're in the process of completing that. Once that's been approved by Planning and Zoning, we will make application to DNR. In regards to the Corps of Engineers permit, we've had two meetings with them, one with their enforcement officer out of Little Rock. They've both been on site and inspected the facility, and we are working through their guidelines on making that permit application, and with the work that's already been placed, the mitigation to address those issues in conformance with their requirements. The one thing I would like to add, too, is that as Bob pointed out, we have had several inspections by the Department of Natural Resources to make sure that we are not negatively impacting the water quality of the unnamed tributary to Turkey Creek. And to date, they have found all measures on site to be adequate to make sure that that is taking place, that there's been no negative impacts to the water quality. And we continue to monitor that on a weekly basis with the inspections on site, and then too after every rainfall event. And those, in accordance with our permits, are documented and logged and kept records, and those records are reviewed by DNR every time they make a site appearance, and they've made numerous ones. And that information is available at their office.
You said they're documented within the permits. Is that the 75-acre permit or a prelim to the larger?
The unique thing about this particular site is the 75 acres that was a part of the original permit and the work that exceeded that all drain to the same tributaries. And the stormwater measures that are in place are working for both the original 75-acre permit and the area that was disturbed outside of those limits. And again, DNR has been site to inspect that to make sure there's no adverse impacts. And they have directed the developer to do no additional grading work outside that 75-acre area, and that request has been met by the developer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Would entertain a motion if one is to be made.
I'll make a motion to deny appeal because I don't find any fault with the planning and zoning's record.
I have a motion on the floor for denial. Do I hear a second? Motion been made and seconded to deny the appeal. Any further discussion? Tom, how would you vote on this motion?
To deny.
David?
Deny.
Bob?
Deny.
Chairman also would vote to deny. Thank you. Thank you. The next appeal is on Country Farm Estates Homeowners, 11-4A. Bob, would you give us the staff report?
Case number on this is 2011-004A. The applicant is Country Farm Estates Homeowners Association. The request, the applicant, Country Farm Estates Homeowners Association, is seeking to appeal the Planning Commission approval of Division 3 permit number 2011-16 for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. In review, the applicant, Country Farm Estates Homeowners Association, is appealing the Planning Commission's decision to approve Division 3 permit 2011-16 for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex, believing that the proposed development does not meet all the requirements of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. However, the reasoning for the request is not stated in this application. In summary, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this appeal request, the Planning Commission approval of the decision of record for Division 3 permit number 2011-16 shall be reversed and shall be considered null and void. The following requirements shall apply unless revised by the Board. The Board of Adjustment's decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days or the approval shall expire.
Thank you. And would those that would like to speak on this case for appeal please rise for our swearing in. Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Gary Gillum. If you would like to be, I presume that you're associated with the Homeowners Association?
Yes.
All right, sir.
Yeah.
Or is
Jay? My name is Gary Gillum.
How about Mr. Todd Asheloff?
Am I not supposed to be?
You're the one on
here?
The appellate, I'm sorry.
Hmm?
We'll come back to you.
Wait, Mr. That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
That was my fault.
No problem.
Please spell your last name.
My last name, the pronunciation is Aeschlimann, and the spelling is A-E-S-C-H-L-I-M-A-N.
That's what I thought.
Let's see, somebody's got more problems than I do.
Yes.
First of all, my name is Todd Aeschlimann, and I serve as the president for Country Farm Estates Homeowners Association. We are the largest residential development within 1/2 mile of the proposed development. We represent about 80 properties and approximately 250 residents. Our development has probably a real estate value of approximately $16 million of assessed value in Taney County. Our neighborhood is a diverse group of people comprised of singles, families, retirees, and widows. We have a complex group of opinions regarding the proposed track, but we are united on several issues. We believe in the Taney County Development Code. In fact, we have our own bylaws and covenants that support this code. We support the Taney County Planning and Zoning Department and the Commission, and we want them to be able to do their jobs without unfair political pressure. During this process, we expected our Planning and Zoning Commission to ask direct and specific questions. We counted on them to request, receive, and be able to review information regarding transportation, environmental impacts, sound and lighting analysis, economic development, etc. According to Planning and Zoning Commissioner Martin, she, as a part of the commission, requested a comprehensive plan for this project. This was not provided. The commission asked several questions. Those questions, according to her, were unanswered. Requests for additional documentation was not provided. These are examples of things that we expected and obviously the commission expected regarding this project. What we did not expect was that the commission would move forward with a project of this magnitude without complete and comprehensive information. According to their own testimony, they did not have this information prior to voting. Without having this information, it is hard to believe that a reasonable person, much less a committee that meets once or twice a month, would have enough information to determine the compatibility of this massive project next to our residential neighborhood. In addition, I would like to mention the following, and I tell this to each of you under oath. At the start of this process, I personally attended as many meetings and information sessions as I could in order to gain and develop an educated position on this project. The final question that I asked on several occasions was the same. Would you like to live next to this project? The unanimous answer, save one, Mr. Tom Gammon, was the same. And this included the architect. A resounding no. If it's not compatible for the developers of this project, why should it be deemed compatible for us? In conclusion, we believe the Taney County Planning and Zoning Board neglected their responsibilities by voting on a project of this magnitude without receiving complete and total information in order to determine its compatibility with our neighborhood and others surrounding it. Thank you.
Any questions for Todd?
Not yet.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Gillum?
Gee, I get to come up twice. Nobody else has done that yet. Well, Mr. Way, my name is Gary Gillum. Do you want it spelled?
Yes, sir. For the record.
G-A-R-Y? G-I-L-L-U-M. Well, hello. It's so nice we can all meet here tonight. Just on the other side of a cord. My hope tonight is to enlighten the board with some knowledge that will achieve a cord. I'm going to talk about noise pollution. I'm going to repeat my name now because it's in the script here. So my name is Gary Gillum. I live in Ridgedale. For approximately 16 years, I designed and built loudspeaker systems in Ridgedale. Built large, high-output movie theater systems for a company in Boston, Massachusetts. Shipped product worldwide from New Zealand to Norway, Hawaii to Jamaica. Supplied speaker systems for the National Park Service, including the World War II Arizona Memorial in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. Prior to that, I was chief engineer at Clips & Associates in Hope, Arkansas, a major name in the loudspeaker industry. While there, 11 years, designed several loudspeaker systems, headed up the professional sound division, received 5 patents, was a member of the Audio Engineering Society, and published twice in their professional journal, the JAES. Okay, so what? Well, I understand how to measure sound pressure levels indoors, outdoors, and in anechoic chambers. This is part of how you design a speaker, trying to get a flat frequency response. There are, of course, other things that are measured, intermodulation, distortion, impedance, polar response, etc., etc. The proposed racetrack has the potential of developing very high SPLs. However, this noise level cannot be known until the track is built. And if and when it is built, nothing can be done to reduce that level. Monitoring towers placed around the track will serve no purpose other than record an event sound level over a period of time. This record can be falsely interpreted. If, for instance, a group of crows, starlings, or blue jays happens to spend some time nearby, near one of the monitoring stations, or high wind gusts, thunder, jets taking off from the airport, etc., is the county willing also to hire a trained sound marshal and purchase 4 SPL meters for $10,000, more or less, as suggested by Mr. John Jackal, if I get that correct, of the HNTB Corporation, who did a sound study for the BSEC. In his evaluation, he chose to use 117.5 dB level to calculate and predict noise levels at various locations near the track. I chose to use 124, so naturally his figures reflect a much lower noise figure at the various locations on his map. I found after researching levels at various other tracks that the 123 dB at 84 feet recorded at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is a far more realistic value. Some of the tracks had levels of 138 to 140 dB. And 115 dB, the same figure John used to... I'll move right along. All right. Okay, now listen to this. I lay 1.6 miles as the crow flies from the railroad track at an elevation of 1,300 feet. The train track is at around 1,100 feet, a difference of about 200 feet in elevation. The train is in a deep valley where the racetrack would be. I can hear the trains at night in my bedroom quite often, depending on weather conditions. Same is true for the racetrack. It is not objectionable, but I can hear it. The train's acoustic output is nothing compared to 43 roaring V8 engines with straight pipes at full throttle. Will we hear the track in our home? You bet we will. And so will hundreds of other people in the area. Want further evidence? You have all heard a tornado warning siren. They come in various sizes and types. Sentry Siren, who has been in business since 1905, seems to have their act together. Let's look at their Model 10, rated at 115 dBc. That's a C scale on a sound level meter at 100 feet. Notice they use the C scale for measuring the sound output. The C scale measures acoustic energy.
I'm sorry, Gary, your time's up.
Time's up. Okay.
Can you give us the last sentence?
You bet. Am I mic on? Okay. let's forget the C scale crap. Let's see. Their estimated sound circle is 6,000 feet for the 115 dB siren. The sound circle for a 30 dB siren is 12,400 feet. That's over 2 miles. The first one is over a mile, and that's just one siren.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions for Mr. Gillum?
I do.
Mr. Gillum?
Mr. Gillum?
Yep.
A tornado siren is designed to travel distances, and it's mounted.
Yes, it is.
Way up in the air, correct?
Pardon?
It's mounted up in the air so you can get the best travel out of
certainly.
It?
Certainly.
Okay, so would that be true for a tornado siren put down in a valley with...
It wouldn't be as effective.
Hills,
it wouldn't be as effective. Okay. Of course not. But my point was you can hear the train that is down by the creek down there. So you have to go up all, you know, 200-300 feet to get to a level that comes over to my house, which is 1 6/10 miles.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr. Wade?
I'll just turn until the next.
All right. And Tammy Pasco?
No, I think it's all in the
thank you. Anthony, we're back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I do my brief cross-examination at this time?
You may.
I would like to start with Mr. Aishelman.
Say what?
I just want to ask you one question.
Could you speak? Come to the podium so we can hear.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'd like to ask you one question, Mr. Aishelman.
Sure.
In your subdivision, what are the number of houses that are within 1,000 feet of where this proposed racetrack is going in?
Within 1,000 feet?
Within 1,000 feet.
None that I know of.
That's all. Thank you. And Mr. Gillum, please. In the calculations that you prepared in your letter and that you've testified about to the board, the calculations you made are based upon the inverse square law, right? That's your first calculation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
But
6 dB for every doubling.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
None of your calculations and the evidence you provided the board didn't take into account atmospheric absorption.
Of course not.
Okay. And it didn't.
It varies. It's variable from minute to minute, hour to hour, day to day. And that would be quite. There are charts and graphs for it for different relative humidities, so on and so forth. That you can do some calculations for a specific time.
Mm-hmm. Your numbers didn't take into account ground absorption either, did they?
No.
And didn't take into account other attenuating factors such as trees, buildings, or anything of that nature, correct?
No, that would be correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're good, you know.
I believe at this time I would just respond. And I would just refer the commission back to the Board of Adjustment back to the testimony given by Mr. Jekyll earlier this evening in his response to Mr. Gillum's report. In response to Appeal 11-4-A, this appeal has not presented any evidence to you all tonight that any error was committed by the Planning Commission. Mr. Jones previously testified on the compatibility issue. No evidence was indicated that any absolute policy or even relative policy was violated in this particular appeal. I would suggest to this Board of Adjustment that the Planning Commission had all the information necessary to make its determination. I don't know if you heard, but there was 6 hours of testimony that was given that evening. It didn't get out till 12 p.m. For all of these reasons, BSCC would respectfully suggest to the Board of Adjustment that it deny Appeal 11-4-A. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll declare the public input session over and have the board deliberate. Would we have a motion?
Move to deny.
I make a motion to move to deny.
All right.
I'll second.
I have a motion made by Bob Hanslin and seconded by Tom Gideon to deny the request of appeal. I'll call for the vote then. Bob, how would you vote?
Move to deny.
Tom?
To deny.
David?
Deny.
And the chairman also will deny. Our fifth one is Big Cedar Lodge, 11-5A. And Bob, would you give us the staff report?
This is case number 2011-005A. The applicant is Big Cedar Lodge. The applicant, Big Cedar Lodge, is seeking to appeal the Planning Commission approval of Division 3 Permit 2011-0016 for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. the applicant, the Big Cedar Lodge, is appealing the Planning Commission's decision to approve Division 3 permit 2011-16, again for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex, believing that the proposed development does not meet all the requirements of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. The applicant believes that the approval of the Division 3 permit 2011-16 has failed to satisfy multiple absolute relative policies of the Development Guidance Code, including Section 4.12.2, 4.12.3, 11.1.1, 11.1.2, 11.1.3, 11.1.7, 11.1.8, Section 12.4, and Appendixes F and I, as detailed in their appeal application. In summary, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this appeal request, the Planning Commission approval of the decision of record for Division 3 permit 2011-16 shall be reversed and shall be considered null and void. The following requirements shall apply unless revised by the Board. The Board of Adjustment's decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days or the approval shall expire.
Thank you. For those that would like to speak on this appeal, would you please rise? I'll swear you in. Please raise your right hand. You solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. I wonder who's first here. Mr. Wade, would you like to be up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the board pleases, I will not speak to those issues that I've already raised with you, and ask that you take those into consideration in this appeal so that we can move past those. If that's okay with you, I see you nodding your head yes.
Yes.
Okay. As noted, I represent Big Cedar and Blue Green in this appeal. As you know, Big Cedar is in close proximity to this proposed development. Top of the Rock, the restaurant, which recently had a fire a couple years ago, I was within 3/4 of a mile of this proposed development and is undergoing significant and substantial renovation based on permits issued by the Planning Commission. I think it's important that I tell you that, and you know, Big Cedar has been an important part of this community for 25 years. Big Cedar is part of Bass Pro Shops, which has been part of the Taney County community for 40 years. And it's the first time in either company's history that they or its founder have retained counsel to oppose any development in Taney County. And we have done so because of our genuine concern about the compatibility of the proposed racetrack in this particular area. As I said, Top of the Rock is within 3/4 of a mile of this proposed development. And in that renovation that's gone on there, it stands in stark contrast to the racing facility. It's proposed that there'll be an Ozarks Heritage Preserve, a Mrs. Tate's Gardens, a natural history museum is being built and constructed as we speak. Well, maybe not tonight, but today. An expanded golf course is being constructed. There's a contemplation for electric carts to take visitors through a nature course from Highway 65 and 86 to the facility. There are 300 people working on the facility now. There are lots of area craftsmen, some of which were here tonight and may still be here tonight, stonemasons, carpenters, excavators. These are real existing jobs. These are real existing development. You know from your history here, you know Big Cedar is a real development, a destination resort, and you know that there's a compatibility issue, a concern here, maybe not with respect to 1,000 feet, the literal 1,000 feet, but you know with respect to the off-site improvements that I've talked to you about, the road construction, the development, that if a racetrack with 65,000 people or with the potential for 65,000 visitors comes, it will have an impact on other property owners like Big Cedar. And that would be traffic, that would be sound, that would be light, and that would be the county's ability to deal with those issues. And unfortunately, as I pointed out and you've seen in the exhibits we've given you, and I think I've offered exhibits, just so the record's clear, 1 through 12. We've given you 1 through 11, and I've marked exhibit 12, which is the economic report that I received from MoDOT. So the record's clear, I've shown you that, and I'd like you to consider those as part of this appeal as well. You've seen that the proposals by the developer have changed, and that the Planning Commission may not have been given a fair opportunity to review and consider those. And we know, because the Planning Commission was not given complete reports, that the public certainly didn't have the right or opportunity, I shouldn't say right, the opportunity for input on those issues. And that's what the code's all about. It's all about making sure that people at least get a fair shake and the opportunity to be heard, and that there is some level of transparency. And I think that the Planning Commission attempted to do that, but unfortunately, given the time constraints and the changing proposals of the developer, they were never given an opportunity to do that. And because of that, you do not have a clear picture. And I think one of the chairman pointed out, it's somewhat like herding cats. We don't have a clear picture of what the offsite improvements are for the roadways. We do not have a clear picture as to how the sound will be mitigated. And how do I know that? Because they have appealed that condition in the decision of record. They've asked that you change that to exceed the decibel levels that were imposed by the Planning Commission. So I assume, we have to assume, that those decibel levels will be exceeded. And that will impact the neighbors. And they never had a fair opportunity to consider that. So the other issue that I wanted to raise that I haven't talked about tonight is the height restriction. And that's section 4.12. And if you look at that section, it talks about the fact that you can't exceed 70 feet from the base plane. And the only way you would know whether you're going to exceed 70 feet from the base plane is if you had a drawing, a measurement, some kind of drawing, engineer drawing that would establish how high it's actually going to be. To my knowledge, that hasn't been provided. And why is that important? Because there's going to be lights. Those lights are going to impact potentially the residents. Light is one of those off-site nuisances that has to be considered and potentially mitigated. Again, the Planning Commission didn't have those plans, those drawings in place to make that decision properly. The water and environmental issues that were approved, I think you've already heard and you know that the Corps of Engineers issued a violation for 404 permit violation, and also there was a land disturbance permit issue. So we have all these issues, and the developer would suggest to you that it's okay to have these issues, we can fix these issues, it's not a big deal because we did everything right and the zoning change occurred and we're going to get these straightened out. And I think somebody commented that, well, they still have to get Division 1 or Division 2 permits to proceed with the development. Well, that becomes a slippery slope. When the development starts and they start building things and they start doing things, then the Planning Commission is left in a position where, well, look, we have all this infrastructure in place. We spent all this money. You can't stop us now, even though we can't afford to do the off-site improvements and we can't afford to fix the lights and we can't afford to fix the noise. We still have all this development. You can't stop us now. That's where the Planning Commission is going to be. That's the place they're going to be. That's where Mr. Ashley is going to be. Unless we send them back, revoke the permit, have them reapply, Have them get their MoDOT development agreement in place. There's nothing stopping them from doing that. Nothing. Have them get their sound study in place and submit to the Planning Commission. That's okay. Have them get their light height restriction and say, okay, it's going to be 82 feet high or it's going to be 100 feet high, and here's why it's not going to impact the neighbors. Have them do all those things so the public can have a fair and informed debate about what they're doing. And that hasn't been done. And that's what the absolute and relative policies require. And that's what Mr. Cottle told them at the concept hearing. It's not a big surprise to them. Mr. Cottle told them when the concept was in place, you need to have all these things in place before we're going to issue you a permit. Now, sometime between May 16, 2011 and July 2011, I guess that changed. But he was right when he said that. He was right. And that's what this board should do. Let me tell you finally, my boss, Mr. Morris, is a huge racing fan. And he loves racing. And if these things were done so that we could have some assurance that it won't be impactful to a resort that brings in substantial visitors to our community and creates substantial amount of economic viability to our area, if we had these assurances in place, maybe it would be okay. Maybe it would be okay. But they've stepped past that. They've asked for permission, or they've started without asking for permission. And that's the big concern, because it's not like Kansas. It wasn't started in a principally rural area, and then the development came. They're building it next to some proposed development that's substantial and has been here for a significant period of time. And could be, and we know, our common sense tells us, that a 65,000 visitor event is going to have an impact on the other residents and businesses. And what do you know, sitting here right now, that would suggest to you that that's going to be mitigated? You don't know. What you do know is that MoDOT said, as of a month ago, that they were so concerned about this development that they were not prepared to submit it for the Economic Impact Development Program because of this substantial change in their presentation. That's what you know as of a month ago. That's 3 months after they got the permit. So they went from July 11th, telling the Planning Commission one thing, to October 5th, telling MoDOT something completely different, so different that they wouldn't submit it. That tells the board right there, that's enough right there to tell the board, why don't we go back and start over? Because there's nothing stopping them from reapplying and doing it right. And maybe if they did, they would have the support of the neighbors. Maybe if they did, they have the support of my boss. But it's so scary to think about a situation where a developer has violated the DNR permit, violated the 404 permit, told MoDOT something different, materially different than they told the Planning Commission, and made representations that seem inconsistent with what they told one, two, three different people, that they ought to go back and start over. Because their decisions will impact a lot of people. Not just the neighbors, but all the visitors that come here that want to take part in nature-based amenities, that come to see the lakes, to play golf, to stay at the resort, to go to Top of the Rock, to go to the Nature Museum. All those people could potentially be impacted by this. And if we can safeguard those, that's great. But if in your mind you think that that Division 3 permit satisfies those, without knowing what they're going to do with MoDOT, without knowing what they're going to do about the sound, then you have a duty to send it back. Thank you.
Questions? Questions for
yes. Things change.
They certainly do.
You know, I might have a plan to get up in the morning and go play golf, and my child gets sick, and I have to change my plans. That seems to be one of your main focuses, is that they're changing things. But isn't that part of the process of achieving a goal, is being flexible and changing?
There's a difference between change and representation. If I pull through McDonald's and change my mind and I want a cheeseburger instead of a hamburger, that's okay. That's a change. If I make a representation to you under oath that I'm going to build 3 interchanges, and then I turn around and tell Moda I'm going to build 2, that's different. So if you make a commitment, you have to stand by it.
Mr. Wade, when Big Cedar has presented projects to the county, what constitutes their request and application? A concept plan? Do they have some concept drawing of the facility? What do they do? I mean, do they just come in and say, I want to build something, give us a permit?
Well, speaking generally to the permitting process, it requires, the beginning is the concept proposal. Okay. Then you go to the Planning Commission, and hopefully you start and don't come back.
Well, I guess I'm looking for a little bit of history of what Big Cedar has done.
I have not. As I mentioned, this is the first time they've retained counsel to oppose development. I have not worked with them in applying for developments, so I couldn't speak to that with any personal knowledge.
So when I'm sorry.
Okay, Bob, are you 3?
Yeah.
David?
So Big Cedar, when they propose something and get a permit, that's it. They don't change it. It goes exactly like it was. Top of the Rock hasn't changed. They don't change their plans.
If you're suggesting that a nature museum is somehow outside the permit, is that what you're suggesting? Because that's not accurate.
I'm asking a question. Do they change their plans after they've been submitted for approval?
Do plans get changed? Absolutely.
After they've been submitted and you've got permits to do it, they've changed?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Are you suggesting also that there's a sound problem with the track for the hotel and condo guests that are down in the close to the lake area, as opposed to being up high where the Top of the Rock restaurant is?
The problem with the sound is we know racetrack courses are loud. We provide some information to the Planning Commission about Bristol and some other racetracks, which generate decibel levels of up to, I think, 130 at the pit level or the track level. What we don't know is because I don't, until a racetrack is built, you don't know how loud that's going to be. We know what straight line distance decibel attenuation is. We don't know how it would attenuate through the hills and the valleys. They don't know, and we don't know. The problem with that is, the concern that we have is if they're wrong, because they're taking information, I believe, from other speedways, Iowa or Michigan or things in other locations. So if they're wrong about that, it's going to have a significant and substantial impact. So we suggested and we thought that there should be some accurate study done with the permission or approval of the Planning Commission to go on site and do some plan that maybe the developer and the neighbors agreed with to do a test and see exactly how far the levels might reach. And I think that's really the complaint that we have on that issue, because if they're wrong, then it's going to impact a lot of people.
And Bob, the question is, are BSCE, are they completely in compliance now with county and the MoDOT, DNR and the Corps of Engineers?
No, they're not.
At this time, they have not obtained their 404 permit through the Corps. It's my understanding that they're working to obtain that permit, but they have not obtained that permit. They do have a valid county and Missouri DNR permit for 75 acres of disturbance at this point.
Okay. And is there any live water on this project, or is this what we consider a runoff tributary that only happens when it rains?
There is a tributary located on the property.
Yes, we've seen it.
Which we visited. But it's my understanding, and of the property that's been disturbed. Is that what you're speaking to?
I didn't see any live water on the.
I'm not aware of any in the area that's been disturbed.
Okay. But thank you.
But the water retention is DNR's okay with it now, covering the 75 acres and the additional disturbed land. They're okay with all that.
In my understanding, they've made a number of site visits, and in most instances, whenever the representatives from the DNR have been on site, they've contacted the county to ask if a county representative wanted to be on site as well. And it is my understanding that they feel that all these measures are compliant with the regulations. They have not found any evidence of siltation in the creek tributary, in the Turkey Creek tributary.
Thank you.
Gary Gillum. Okay. And Tammy Pascoe. And Anthony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to have some witnesses on this one with regard to
this gentleman.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
It appears I may have signed up for the wrong list.
Can I call you at that time, sir?
Yes, my name is Terry Pylant.
All right.
Thank you.
I am going to have some witnesses on this appeal regarding some events that occurred last Wednesday, November 9th. I'll initially have Mr. Jones come in.
I believe what he would like me to provide testimony in regards to is that there was a sound test conducted on site last Wednesday, and I witnessed that sound test. So I'd like to give you my experiences of that sound test. Is that there were two stock cars brought on site, and the goal was to determine what those impacts or what the sound impacts would be on the neighboring property. There were about six people that were stationed from the west side of approximately the location of Highway 86 all the way around to the north side, and then again wrapping around to the east side. I specifically was located between the proposed racetrack and the airport on Sandy Lane, or excuse me, on Blue Ridge. I had direct visual sight of the track. It was about 3,000 feet. They ran two stock cars. It was about 5 or 5:30 in the evening, and I had a sound measuring device with me to measure the decibel levels. We were measuring on the A scale. During that test, they were maneuvering the cars at the track level in a circle, and I was measuring the peak decibel levels that were coming from the track from that particular location. My observations that I received a peak reading of about 54 decibels with those two cars operating, and the others that were positioned around the track reported that in the vicinity of Whitfield and Highway 65 that they could not hear the testing, or they could not hear the cars. The predominant noise came from the Highway 65 traffic. There were some people that were over on between Sandy Lane and Blue Ridge, which are going to be a little bit to the north and east of the proposed track. And probably the location, if you're familiar, there's a red barn that you can see from the project site. So it's the one that's most visible. And the gentleman with that was at that location received a decibel reading of about 64 dBA. So I just wanted to give information as far as what our observations were from that particular evening. Now, again, that's two cars and not 43 cars, but again, wanted to get some kind of impact to how that would affect the adjoining properties. I would also like to report that during that time, there were a couple jets that took off, and they actually measured on the same decibel level, and they had a peak value of about 70 dBA. So information on my observations of a sound test that was conducted on site last Wednesday.
And what would your opinion be if there is 43 cars going at the same time?
I tell you what, I would rather not answer that because I'm not a sound expert, but we do have a sound expert that could probably answer your question better than I could.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Jones?
Mr. Jacob.
There's this, John Jacob again. There's a standard equation you could use. I'm not going to bore you with it, but it's basically about 13.5 dB greater than what they measured. So if they measured 65, it'd be 77. If they measured 60, it'd be 73.
How the location of the track and the stadium, if it's built, how much is that going to mitigate? Because I was coming back from St. Louis the other day, and I noticed, you know, they've got all the barriers on the sides of the highways to mitigate the sound into the backyards of the people that live right there. I mean, how effective are those as compared, I mean, how effective is it going to be with the stadium around it, and is it going to significantly stop the noise? The natural topography and the trees and the stadium, or is it going to be the same 64 that you read now with bare ground?
As we said before, the track was, what did I say, 40, 50 feet in the hole. That will reduce the noise levels within a quarter, half a mile. However, if you have a situation where you are in a valley, then you have what we call double diffraction, in the sense that the sound waves break over the first hill and they break over the second hill before they get down there. The next ridge does not have the benefit of the ground attenuation. All that it has is the atmospheric attenuation. That is less than what's at the ground level. So you could have a situation where at a half mile from the track in the valley, you could have a noise level of 50, and up on top of the next ridge, it might be 65. And that's farther away. When we've done some measurements at some tracks recently, and at a half mile from a track, with the wind blowing towards the monitor, we had 66 dBA. You could hear the race cars, but the local street traffic was louder than that. But the local street traffic wasn't continuous. It wasn't like Highway 65. It would be a car pass by and another car pass by and nothing. And in between, you heard the racetrack. There's no doubt, you know, I could not say that you couldn't hear the racetrack. Again, that was, you know, the wind was blowing towards it. On the opposite side of the track, at a half mile, I had to struggle to hear the race cars.
So there's a lot of variance.
So basically, from one side of a track to the other side of a track, with the wind blowing across the track, we had probably a 17 dB difference.
And as I understand, stadium seats themselves are only on about one half of the oval.
Correct. They're on the western side.
They're on the western side.
Right. Basically, with the modeling we've done so far, we get the least attenuation to the east. However, in some of the areas, even though they're only half mile away, they're sitting down lower than the level of the track. And so therefore, you get that diffraction of the sound waves over all the land as it rolls down the hill to get to them, and it's going to be below what, you know, the criteria was requested.
Okay. Thank you. Continued. Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to sum up at this point in time for BSEC on Appeal 11-5-A. We do not believe that any sufficient evidence has been introduced in front of this Board of Adjustment tonight to find that the Planning Commission made any error in the findings that it made. What we're talking about here was a change in land use. And as I said, the Planning Commission meeting lasted 6 hours and plenty of people testified. People don't like change. And there's always a balance. Your code takes this into account in its relative policies and its absolute policies. The balancing of a landowner to do what they would like to do with their land to reach its highest and best use against the other the people who live around the area or have property in the area, and there's always a balance. I would respectfully suggest that the Planning Commission took that into account, took into account the absolute and relative policies, and made the correct decision without any error on the points that are being raised in this particular appeal, not on the points raised in ours. Big Cedar Lodge is more than 1,000 feet away from the proposed area of the of the racetrack. You've heard prior testimony. I'm not going to go over it in great detail regarding compatibility, and the maps speak for themselves. You see the area, you see where 65 is, you see the airport, you see the railroad tracks. This issue on noise, there was a lot of testimony that was in front of the Planning Commission, and you've heard some additional testimony tonight. What is a nuisance? You know, you might get differing opinions from individuals depending on who they are, what their background is, what they might be taught, what they might tolerate. I would respectfully suggest that any sound issue that might arise once this development's completed would be an issue that an adjoining landowner could raise and go and have to prove what a nuisance is. And that's typically determined by a jury. And a jury would decide whether what the landowner is complaining about would constitute a nuisance. The points that Mr. Wade raised in his appeal on his points 4 and 5, and he claims that there was an absolute policy that was violated with regard to the land disturbance permit. You've heard plenty of testimony tonight. It's already been covered. No absolute policy was violated in this case to affect the change in land use that was found by the commission. Mr. Wade spoke to section 4.12.2 and 4.12.3 regarding relative policies regarding the exceeding of the height restrictions. BSEC met with staff and dealt with this issue. On condition 11, the light plan under 4.12.2, the decision of record that was entered by the commission in this case covers this at condition number 11, which we're not appealing. Mr. Wade referred to Mr. Cobble's comments at the planning session. I'd like to note for the record that Mr. Cobble voted in favor of this land use change when the commission made its vote. For all these reasons, we would respectfully suggest that the points raised by Big Cedar with regard to the conclusions made by the commission in this, they have not established that the commission committed any error in reaching their conclusions, and we would respectfully suggest that this Board of Adjustment deny Appeal 11-5A. Thank you.
Rebuttal witness at all? Mr. Wade?
No, sir.
Thank you. Any questions for anybody else in the audience? I'll declare the public venue portion of this closed, and we'll open this for board deliberation. At all?
I make a motion to deny the appeal.
I have a motion to deny by David Nelson. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
And we do have a second. I'll call for a vote then. David, how would you vote?
Deny.
Tom?
Deny.
Bob?
Deny.
Chairman, and I also. Thank you very much. As you all know, the decision that we have reached tonight does not stop the process. There's already one lawsuit that's been filed. There is the circuit court that you can go to appeal to the circuit court, where a one-man judge will decide the issue. I